Hey, this is Mike Portnoy, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
Welcoming you to that which we like to call Focus on Metal. How's it going, man?
It's going great.
Good.
More discussion. Lots of topics.
This will be, unlike many podcasts, this will end up being a very anticlimactic episode 600. There's
is
no fanfare.
Is this 600?
It is 600. I mean, if you count all of the special episodes that we did back during COVID, we went past 600 a while ago. And I was, because they aren't all noted on the website, so I was going to go, and it's funny this happened, but I was going to go back to the Internet Archive and try to pull up the old site and see all of those, but they got hacked. So that site is like off the map at the moment. So I was like, shit, I can't even actually calculate how many more actually we are past 600. But remember when we were doing a couple episodes a week because people were like,
yeah,
we're stuck
COVID
at home, we're bored. And and so we were just pumping out like episodes, two or three episodes a week.
Now we can't be ours to do one
now,
a month.
Now we're doing two or three episodes a year. Yeah. But but this is, this is episode 600.
Yeah.
I was going to try, because I'd been going back and forth with Steve Rosen, who wrote the Tone Chaser book on
Eddie Van Halen, yeah.
And I was going to see about trying to get something together with him to, because I never really got to talk about Eddie on the show. And I was like, oh, that might be good. We had also been offered about the author for about that Rush book, too.
It's not Martin Popoff, is it?
No, Martin did the other one, the Maiden one that came out at the same time Martin did. Speaking of which, the other Maiden one, Hallowed Be Thy Name, it's delayed now until August. It was supposed to be out like...
What do you mean August, 2025?
Yeah. Yeah. It was supposed to be out like this month or last month. It was supposed to be out in September of 2024. And I got a notification because I ordered it that it's now been delayed till August of 2025. I'm like, what the?
Was there a paper shortage?
Apparently. I'm like.
By the time they bring it out, Maiden will have another album will be out of date.
I can't, like, how can a book be delayed for almost a freaking year? Like, how? I don't understand.
Is that what's happening now with books? They're going the same way as vinyl? There's not enough presses?
Maybe. Well, the other thing they have to do then is make that book available in multiple colors. It's a guy that I watch on YouTube who does a channel 33 RPM. Really good. He does kind of quick episodes in and out, but he's pretty good. And one of the things he does occasionally is he goes and he looks at some of the trends that are going on with media, with CDs, with vinyl, with stuff like that. And he did a thing the other day about all of this, like this trend of releasing all these different versions. And there was somebody, it was somebody in the pop realm.
Taylor Swift must have started that.
Well, I think actually like our people did, because we've been having some of these like smaller things where it might be like 100 of this or something. And, you know, so you get like 100 of like one color that might be directly from the band or directly from the label. And then you have the regular black version everywhere else kind of thing. But somebody he mentioned has between the CD, the cassette and the album, there are 23 versions of their new album.
Which one are you missing?
Nobody I was going to be interested in, but it was like,
I don't believe you.
Holy crap. It was okay. just because I have 17 versions
of Invincible Shield. Yeah.
that was a quest that had to be done. But I don't do that for everything. I mean, there's the new Arch Enemy that'll be coming out next year. And that one's, I think that's got, I want to say 8. I just ordered, it's got 1. So this, you know, I mean, there is, but I was like, holy crap, there is a lot of different ones that are now coming out with all these different versions. Even if you look at Dr. Feelgood, that the anniversary one, all the different versions of that, you know, it's kind of, it's ridiculous.
Motley Crue scraping the barrel again because they own their own masters.
Yeah.
Releasing, re-releasing and re-releasing.
I gotta do it well when Vince could sing.
What?
Yeah, but I think that also impacts the pressing plants too, where you're like, you know, trying to crank all this stuff out, and especially some of these ones that are, you have to do a lot of hand work before you're actually pressing them and stuff. It takes time.
Mm-hmm. So the one thing that I get for a band that I love, they'll bring out multiple versions. I'm not the multiple version guy.
Yeah.
What I've bought every time it comes out is I'll get the vinyl box set for Deep Purple.
Mm.
And so I have it for Whoosh, I have it for Infinite, and I have it for the new record.
Yeah.
And you got the regular version.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to hear what your thoughts are on the new record. Did it meet your expectations? What were you expecting?
So I didn't really have any like hard set expectations anymore, that I think they kind of hit a plateau for me with Perfect Strangers. And now, because there's a lot of stuff they've put out since then that I just haven't bothered with. But this was kind of a, you know what, I'm just kind of curious, like where they're at. And so that was more what it was. It wasn't like an expectation, and it was, seemed like a lot of people were saying that it sounded pretty good. And so it was why not? I'll go and I'll pick it up. So that's what I did.
What did you think of it?
I didn't hate it. It's still, you know, it's still not like all the, you know, classic, what I would really love about Deep Purple, but people move on.
Yeah. So. I think for me, I've said it before multiple times on the show, I'm a big fan of the Steve Morse.
Yeah, he's a great player.
I thought that he put the band in a, you know, he's different sound.
Mm-hmm.
Very different sound to Richie Blackmore.
Yeah.
So I think the direction they went with him, it was like a completely different band. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of stuff on those records that Blackmore probably wouldn't want to play.
Yeah, because Steve, I mean, even if you go back and you're familiar with any of the stuff he did with the Dregs, you know, they could just pull shit out of air, you know. So he is the kind of player that goes, I'll give that a shot. Mm. I'll try that idea. Mm. Where, you know, Richie had that reputation of, well, fuck you, this is my band.
Mm. I also think that hiring Don Airey was a stroke of genius after John Lord decided not to be in the band anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's almost like this natural thing of like, who's the natural successor as a keyboardist after John Lord?
The only other guy I can think of would be like someone like Greg Jafria or someone
Yeah,
like
I mean,
that.
Somebody might have raised their hand and go, well, you get Claude Schnell. But it's like, well, no, you got...
Or Jens Johansson
or someone
like that.
Don has that, he has that pedigree, and he's done all that various stuff with
people.
And
he's English.
There's that too, yeah. And it just, yeah, it seems like that's the, it seems like wherever that guy goes, he just like slots right in. So, yeah.
And I think the other stroke of genius they did was to get Bob Ezrin to work with him eventually.
Mm.
He's done, I think, the last 4 records. I absolutely love Whoosh. I think Now What, when whatever year that album came out, that was the one that, the first one they released after John Lord passed away. That was my album of the year. I think Now What is an amazing record. And then they get Simon McBride in, who's, probably at least 30 years younger than any of the rest of them.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, what's going to happen here? Is he going to be able to put his stamp on it? Because I think with Steve, Steve had the, not only did he have the chops, he had that pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
People knew who Steve Morse was. He was one of these guys that a lot of guitar magazines would vote as being one of the best guitar players out there.
Yeah, well, it was that too. And then there was the fact that, you know, here's this guy that people were knew. Well, at least if you were a guitar player, you knew, right? And then he like fucks off and goes plies planes for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So then when he comes back and he's in Purple, people are like hungry for new Steve Morse,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then when you see him alive, he's one of these guys that's on stage that he smiles from the beginning of the show to the end. He is having fun. He looks so freaking happy, and that just carries across to the whole, the energy, the playing, all of that, as opposed to like, a sully moping guy. He just always has this incredible stage presence.
So I think people, when they brought in Simon, they were thinking, how is he going to get his stamp on the band?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the, well, I don't know how it goes behind the scenes, but you have a guy who's a lot younger than Steve Morse. Would he be very deferential to the rest of the guys and say, I'll do what you tell me to do, rather than I'd like to do this.
Yeah.
How will this fit into what you guys do? And after spending a bit of time with the record, I think the reviews are more or less spot on. It's better than I thought it would be. And that's me coming from, I love the Steve Morse stuff. I love his sound with the band.
Yeah.
Obviously, Simon has the background knowledge of the band, how they sound anyway.
Yeah.
That he didn't try and fuck with that. And the guy can obviously play his ass off. And to be honest with you, at this stage, when you have, I think four of those guys are in their 70s, and I think Ian Gillan is probably closer to 80 than 70. For them to be bringing out music this good for me at that time of their life is like fucking hell.
Yeah.
Amazing. And they're still touring.
Yeah.
And Ian Paice can still fucking play his ass off. You know, it's, things some people don't realize is that even though these guys are up there, they're still great players.
Yeah.
You know, you put Roger Glover in a band, you're not going to get shit.
Yeah.
Like, that guy has produced fucking Deep Purple, fucking Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been around the block.
Yeah.
The same with Gillan, the same. Paice has played with multiple bands. You know, he's been Whitesnake for a while, and then he was with, who else has he played with? Gary Moore. With Gary Moore. So, you know, when it comes to drummers, he's up there.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not really like a, I don't ever consider Ian to be like a power drummer.
He's not flashy.
He stays in the pocket. He's got this good, you know, way with the beat. He's got the jazz influence. He's very much like Bill Ward in that respect.
Mm. Yeah. But I think it's a great record. It's just whatever mark it is now. You know, the video of all is Mark 2 and 3. It could be Mark 15 or 16. I don't know. But very happy with the record.
Yeah.
Really happy with it. Simon, some of the solo on it from Simon's fabulous. He just has a great sound. And I know a lot of that is probably from Bob Ezrin as well, the way he mixed it and produced it, because Bob Ezrin is like a fantastic producer. He's got the track record as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much Bob still produces, but do you know, is he working with other bands, or is it when every time Deep Purple comes around, he just wants to work with them?
I don't know how much else he's doing.
Yeah.
It
just seems, for some reason, it just works with them, with Bob Ezrin and Deep Purple now. I think the band and Bob have just, they're riding this wave that they have towards the end of their careers.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, it's tough too. You got to figure, right? Both for Purple and for Bob, right? That this age of big budgets, big studios, like all that stuff that, you know, there's no budget like Bob had to do Destroyer. There just isn't. There's no budget for a lot of that stuff that he would have done with Alice Cooper. It's just not there anymore. So, but now he's got a band that is, like you said, he's got somebody like Roger in there as well. So there's probably a lot of good talk back and all of that. And they're doing this thing on probably a shoestring budget. There's probably stuff that's being done even like at home and stuff. And he doesn't have this big canvas he used to have, and he still makes it work.
But what Bob has is the musicians that can go in and play it old school if they have to do it.
Exactly.
That they can all get in the room together and play.
Yeah.
And he has that.
Yeah.
And long may it continue. You know, the guys are well up there at this stage, but you know, I'd love the record.
Yeah,
and it's got great
reviews. it was a kind of a thing of, you know, at this point they don't have anything to prove, and yeah, like you said, they're still putting stuff out, and it was all right. You know, I haven't bought the last couple ones, but I'll buy this one. Why not?
You know, what was interesting. I think it was in Rock Candy magazine a while back. They asked Roger Glover, what's the one Deep Purple album he keeps going back to? And he picked Perpendicular.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, whether that's got to do with who the new guitar player on and the other guy was gone, but maybe it's just the memories they had when Steve joined, that it felt like a completely new band and the chemistry
right.
was there. And, you know, they were, you know, from the beginning and the enthusiasm was back,
right.
maybe with what happened with Richie before. I don't know, but you know, I'm sure that raised a few eyebrows.
Probably.
Because what are people going to want them to say? Like, they're going to want them to say Machine Head or In Rock, or they're going to want them to say Fireball or,
right.
you know, or Perfect Strangers. Like, Perpendicular. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, I guess you got to, yeah, like all that stuff. Because, I mean, we look at it and go, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, it's In Rock. It's got to be In Rock, or it's, you know, it's got to be Come Taste the Band. Or, but I'm sure, you know, he's got probably as many good memories of that as he's got freaking bad memories of that too. And also it's probably like, that's like beating me to death. But I've got this kind of this other thing that came along that was good. That re-energized me. That made me want to do stuff. And, you know, and that's probably part of what plays into it. And, you know, no pressure or anything like that. And just probably, yeah, just kind of some new collaboration. And then it was fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about another new record that came out. The new Dead Daisies record.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's good.
It is.
It is good.
Yeah, I got all butthurt over the weekend. I played Nick the title track. And she was, I don't like this. She's like, it just sounds like, and I'm like, it's like the title track. It's supposed to like grab you by the balls and like drag you into the album screaming. And she's like, I don't know. It sounds like this, like too much going on. And I was just like, she's like, oh, you're all butthurt about this, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, I am actually. I'm like, I really like this band. And this album is like, probably one of their best.
Yeah, but I've had this thing for a few years now with the Dead Daisies. Is it a band? Or is it a project? Because they've had how many members have been in and out of that band?
David Lowie
is the only constant.
Yeah. Well, David Lowie is the only one that can afford to be the constant.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I think I think that in the case of the Dead Daisies, I think it started as a project, and then it was really meant to be a band. But because they're really trying to do that, like 24/7, 365 almost kind of a thing, that people just go, I can't keep doing this. Like,
yeah, I think.
Because usually if you think about people that are in a band, you kind of have this record, tour, chill, record. But this has just been like, it's like nonstop. And they're pretty damn consistent with release and stuff.
They
too.
Are. But the other problem that a band like that has is their touring is in Europe.
Yeah.
And I go, that's the bread and butter.
Part of what my thoughts on that do come from is from everything that Karabi says in his book, where he talks about where there was stuff where he was even trying to do stuff with his son and he couldn't do it because they just kept dragging him into the next thing and dragging him to the next thing. And I think that like everybody experiences that. So I think that there's probably a high burnout factor that makes it sound more like a project.
Yeah, I think Doug's done 5 albums. Maybe he's done at least 4, I think. He did the 2. No, this is, hold on. 5th. He did 2 with Karabi, and then he did 2 with Glenn Hughes, and now with the new one. Mm-hmm. So he's done 5, maybe 6. So he's definitely been the longest guy in the band other than David Lowie.
Yeah, he's been a fairly constant presence there, yeah.
Yeah. Get well soon, Doug, by the way.
Yeah.
They're on tour, either going on tour or on tour at the moment.
Yeah, they're on tour.
They got Reb Beach to play.
Yeah, which was, granted, Reb is a fantastic player, but I was thinking.
Different sounding.
He is. Because, yeah, Doug's got just very.
He's a Les Paul guy.
He is. Got some awesome gold tops. He's giving me shit about that before too, because he knows I like have this gold top lust for some of his guitars. But the fact that they're on tour and Reb is stepping in, like basically cold. It's like holy shit.
Yeah, but he can do it.
It's still just like. I mean, it's not without a net. He's got, you know, he's still got David playing rhythm and stuff, but you're stepping in and you're stepping in for almost, to me, it's almost, I'm a little biased, but like the marquee guy in the band to me is Doug. And you're stepping in for that and like just right. And it isn't even like, oh, we're going to take 2 weeks off. We'll rehearse you in. He's just like dropped in and went and did it.
Yeah. But if you're getting, understandably, you know, people are going to be, you know, a little bit upset that Doug's not there. But,
yeah.
Of course, the guy has cancer.
Right. And you do have the opportunity that you could say.
You're getting Reb, Doug.
Doug, how'd you play that part? Oh, you just do this.
You're getting Reb in.
Yeah.
Like, Reb is a name.
Oh, but I'm not saying, what I'm saying, though, is not slight on Reb. I mean, he is a great player. I mean, it's why he's on. He's the frigging ghost guitarist on so many damn recordings from Tom Warman, right? But it's the idea that he was able to just like drop in the middle of a tour and just like take it.
That's what session guys can do.
You know,
you have that pedigree. That's what you do. You bring him in. I need to play this. You got an hour to do it.
Like, so if you take like Brad dropping in for Randy, right? Okay. Brad grew up with any of the Sabbath stuff that Ozzy was playing on that tour. So it's like, oh yeah, I can play that, right? And then the other stuff was getting played on the radio. He was, not that he might have been familiar with how to play everything on there, but he knew from the scene who Randy was. He had a little bit more background on that. But it's not like they're playing Dead Daisies on US radio. They are in Europe, but they're not playing it here. So now you're doing this quick study of, okay, what's your set? Okay, I got to learn. This is all the songs I got to learn, like, right now. Which is, it's a pretty big lift for anybody.
Mm. Actually, go off on a slight tangent there because we're talking about Reb. It was an interesting post about a week or two ago. Winger played some show. I think it was a Prog Power, one of these festivals.
Yeah, okay.
And they did the whole Pull record.
Yeah, I think it was Prog Power.
And one of the promoters, I think it was, posted on social media that Winger, they found out what equipment was at the festival. They went and they hired it for a couple of days and rehearsed, knowing that they were going to go in and this was the sound system they were going to get. And
not a bad idea.
Yeah, so the promoter, the guy posted it, said, I've never seen a band do that before and I'm never going to see a band do that again. He said he couldn't believe how prepared they were just to pull that performance off. And by all accounts, it was absolutely fucking amazing.
I bet. Yeah. Oh, the thing too. I mean, because equipment will vary. I mean, if you don't know what your backline is, I mean, yeah, that's can be a problem. You're dropping in. I mean, now they have, fly rigs. So you could go in with your fly rig. I mean, this little bastard's a fly rig, you know, and so it's got basically, and they've got a couple of people have like their own, but it's basically all one unit ready to go. And so you just can drop that in, plug that into the PA, and you've got your sound. Boom, done. But a lot of these people just, they just don't have that. And so, yeah, you go in and suddenly you've got an amp you don't know, or yeah, it makes a difference. So to, but even to like be willing to, like put the money forth to do that, that yeah. says a lot for them.
It says a lot about them, yeah, as people and the standards that they have
yeah.
for their performance.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of that is obviously driven by Kip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But still, to do something like that, it says a lot about their personal pride in how they play,
yeah.
but it also tells them about what they want the audience to get
yeah.
by actually doing that.
Yeah.
That it was a special occasion. They were going to play the album from top to bottom. It's not something that I don't think they've done before.
Yeah.
This is something special, and we're going to make it sound as fucking good yeah. as we can.
Because, like I said, it does make a difference. I mean, how I play this amp is way different than how I play that amp over there. You can play the same notes, but to get the same stuff out of them, there's a certain way you have to play to yeah. get it to happen.
And how many musicians have I spoken to over the years that, you know, they don't rehearse.
Yeah.
They just turn up, they play, they get the paycheck.
Yeah.
And I remember I asked one or two of them about, would they play this song? You know, what about adding this song to the set? Oh, that would require a rehearsal. So in other words, we've learned 10 songs and that's all we're right. ever going to play for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And that's all you're going to get.
Yes.
Actually, it was a smaller band than that. Focus! But, right, so let's talk about the other new album that came out. Striper album.
Mm.
Another album that's getting really good reviews.
Yeah.
Where does Michael Sweet get all the songs?
I don't know. He is pretty damn prolific, that's for sure. And he still sounds awesome. Even live, he sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Now,
yeah, that was one of the ones that, yeah, where I had the opportunity to, oh, I should mention that test pressing, Michael signed.
Okay, nice.
So I had the opportunity to get the test pressing, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to indulge even deeper into my vinyl addiction and okay. do that.
Nice. Because that was that recorded in Spirit House in Massachusetts? I think normally the records are recorded out there.
Yeah, I don't remember where it is.
Yeah, because Michael used to live, I don't think he lives anymore on the Cape up here. But the thing with Michael now is I pick and choose what he brings out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the last Sweet Lynch record. I haven't got any of the Sunbomb albums he's done with Tracy Guns. Mm. But I'll get the Striper stuff and I'll get his solo stuff.
Yeah.
So I can't comment on what the Sunbomb album's like.
Or
I do like the Sweet Lynch stuff, but don't ask me why I never got, was it Heart and Soul or whatever it's called from last year?
It's over there.
Yeah, I never got that. But there's something. There's something about this new Striper record that it's just a notch, I think, above the last one or two that they've done. And I can't put my finger on it. I don't know whether it's a bit more varied. Maybe the guitar tone is a little better on it. Some of the songs are a little bit more poppy, which is what I liked Striper doing from their 80s stuff.
So do you think that maybe that they had to go through a few that were more aggressive albums, which I actually like better, in order to work out the Tim Gaines anger. And now they've gotten through that, and now it's kind of gotten to a point where the songwriting has kind of changed gears a little bit?
I don't know. I think it's just what Michael writes, because he said it himself over the years, and I've asked him. He'll write an album in a week or 10 days. So yeah. That whatever I write in 10 days, that's the album and that's it. I don't think it's as calculated as a lot of records used to be years ago, where you'd spend 6 months to a year doing it. You bring in outside songwriters.
Right. Well, I mean, like I said, though, he is very prolific, but however, whatever your mood is like is also going to dictate a lot of times, like, what you write. You know, you typically, if you're pissed off, you're typically not going to write a happy record. I mean, there's a reason why Kill 'Em All sounds markedly different than 72 Seasons, you know, and it's
money. I sack loads
they
of money.
They have more because I bought three versions of that album. But it's the mood too, you know, and yeah, if you're angry, you're going to get that more aggressive kind of thing that happens. And if you're happy or you're in a more receptive place, then you may have other crap happening.
So one of the posts I put on Facebook about a week ago, because I said I got the new record in a separate post, and that got me thinking. Name a band that has released their best material 10 years after starting recording. And people picked Stryper. Some of them picked Stryper.
Yeah.
And I could see it. I could definitely see it. Now, with the nostalgia factor, a lot of people are going to say, to hell with the devil. To a lesser extent, Soldiers Under Commander and God We Trust, maybe.
Right.
Because that's the 80s stuff. That's when you're getting into it. But
yeah,
when it comes to actual songwriting and consistency, I can see that definitely with the Stryper albums.
Well, I think too,
the newer ones,
where you start talking about some of the other ones, that you had a lot of label, you had both label pressure, and then you had this, and Michael's talked about it before too, this like social expectation pressure too, and so they were essentially having to bow to both of those while trying to be successful. And now they don't. It's kind of like
they're self-managed. Michael's wife manages the band. It's all there. And to be honest with you, I've said this before as well, that organization, class top to bottom.
Yeah.
Class.
Yeah. But it's the whole idea too, though, that you don't have this whole, you know, fundamentalist Christians examining every move they make kind of thing either. Like, you know, they went through all of that shitstorm, and they didn't weather all of that very well. But now I think they're past that, and it's basically, I'm going to write what I want to write. I'm going to be happy about it, and we're going to tour, and we'll just be good to people. And I think that's what they're doing.
Because what they have is they got 3/4 of the classic lineup.
Yeah.
They have Perry Richardson, who some people might know as being the bass player in Firehouse, so he's known as well. They have a singer, still writes great material, and still sings great, and plays great.
Yeah.
So they've got all that going for them. And every 2 years, new record.
Yeah.
Two years down the line, new record.
Yeah.
And they still look good. Now, yeah. I know Oz has had his health issues, but... And Michael had I think he had something wrong with his eye about a year or two ago with the last record. But, you know, touch wood, their health's been good. And they're on a good run.
Yeah.
And they're another old band that are releasing really good new material that a lot of people won't give a shit about. And I think they're missing out.
What's surprising is that when we used to have Michael on a fairly regular basis for a while.
Actually, yeah, but before I get into that, actually somebody commented on my Facebook post about, it's been 5 years since you had Michael on, you're not interviewing him anymore. And I commented back saying, I'm not interviewing anybody anymore because I don't have the fucking time to do it.
Yeah, but
it's not personal.
That's exactly what I was saying, is that when we had Michael on, fairly regularly.
For every release he had out, and there was a lot of releases.
And every time
I would post that we were having him coming up, it was like people were, no pun intended, rejoicing. It was probably the one person we'd have on that generated the most excitement.
Well, maybe I'll break the cycle and reach out.
But why I'm saying that is that I think that they might be one of these bands that, although it might not be like massive publicity about it, but they may actually see decent sales numbers for their albums because they still have this kind of a loyal, almost underground fan base.
Yeah. Well, they know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they need to do.
Yeah.
And they just do it. And I don't think they have high aspirations of all of a sudden, you know, radio is going to pick them up
right.
or whatever. But,
yeah,
you know, they're very, very knowledgeable about where they are
right.
in the market. And they do it really well.
The last time that we hung with Michael was at that weird-ass club in Malden, right? Was it Malden? It was Malden. And I've seen a couple other shows there, including Slaughter. None of those shows were as well attended as that Striper show.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I think people just can't get over the lyrics and the image. But, you know, sometimes you say, oh, I'm a huge Striper fan. Striper sucks, you know, their lyrics are whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm not a lyric guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't pour over the lyrics. What gets me, how does a singer sound? Does the actual band sound good? Is the song catchy?
Right.
Is it boring into my brain?
I mean, they're really good live, and Michaels is actually a freaking fantastic guitar player. And the fact that the band has two really freaking fantastic guitar players between him and Oz, it makes it for a good live show. You're just like, oh, you know, just for a night of going out and listening to guitar.
Definitely.
It was good. So it's not like, you know, I'm not like going around thumping a Bible, because Nikki and I always joke too, like if we walked into church, it'd probably burn down. But it's just like, yeah, they write some good shit. He still sounds awesome. The whole band is tight as hell. And just really good guitar playing.
Yeah, they're good. They're a good heavy metal, hard rock band.
Yeah.
Always have been.
Yeah.
They have, and you know more about this than I do, but, and I know Michael has said it for years, that he's fixated with tone,
mm-hmm.
but they have this guitar sound that makes them stand out from a lot of the other bands. And you probably know what it is, and you can get into the nitty gritty.
Well, he's got this thing where that guitar tone is not clashing with his vocal range at all. And it's really well.
How would I describe it? It's really clean. I'm not the guy to describe it, actually. It's just, to me, it's just different to a lot of other bands.
Mm-hmm.
Very clinical, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's very effective with the noise gate on there, and he's really optimized how they do the overdrive as well. So, and there's different ways you can do the overdrive and the clipping and all that. This is like, I got one crazy clipping circuit I've been making.
Of course you do. What colors?
Hence all the circus shit in front of you. But it's, yeah, I mean, he's honed that down between the guitar he uses and the pickups and everything else. Yeah, he's definitely someone who's like, maybe not the degree of Eddie, but yeah, chasing down the tone he wants.
Mm,
yeah. Mm.
So let's finish up. Well, I've probably gone six tangents on this, but we haven't really spoken about this that much, I don't think. The Kerry King Death Angel thing with Mark.
Yeah.
So Kerry brings the record out. Mark sings on it. He had this agreement that he wasn't allowed to tell anybody he was on it.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was thinking to myself, how is this going to fit in with, he's going to sing with Kerry and he's still a death angel.
Yeah.
That with bands making their money on the road, now.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's bound to clash. And, of course, it did when the band had to pull out of the Wasp tour because of one of the reasons was scheduling conflicts.
Yeah.
I think the drummer, Will Carroll, I think explained it a bit more and said that it's Mark because Mark decided that he's playing with Kerry and we can't play and it sucks.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons it sucks is because once you cancel a tour, you don't earn money.
True. That's true. Yeah, I just figured they would be out of Wasp because they were like, no, fucking Blackie's gonna flake on us and like, you know what, I'm gonna do this instead. But yeah.
But put yourself in Mark's shoes, right? So you're in debt to Angel. You've been back in debt to Angel since what, The Art of Dying, which is 15 years old, maybe even more than that. When they got back with the classic lineup, right? So you've done all these records since then. Which a lot of people really like.
Yeah.
Like they're one of these old school trash metal bands. They were, maybe second tier that people can point to now, like the likes of Overkill and Flotsam, and say, you know what? They're still releasing fucking great material now.
I still buy them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he decides to do the Kerry King thing, not tell anyone in Death Angel because he wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, and that to me, that's the shitty part.
Now, if you're the other guy's in Death Angel and he's in your band, how can that not adversely affect the way you look at him now and say, what the fuck, like, what about us? Like, you're in this band. You'd rather go and do the Kerry thing and not tell us? Like, even if that didn't clash with the dates, I'd still be fucking pissed.
Yeah, because I've always, I guess naively, but I've always considered Death Angel to be like this band of brothers. And, I mean, that's basically kind of what they were at the beginning, right? But I've always considered that it's always been that tight-knit band, which has been something that's been pretty cool about them. It's always been almost literally a family. You would think that it would be, all right, Kerry, I'm going to do this, but I'm in this other band, and I need to tell my band.
Maybe he knew the other band to tell him no.
I don't think they can really tell him no, but I think you just need to at least tell him, like,
I need
to fucking do this.
Hmm.
It's your band, you know, you should be open with them. I just can't fathom why you would be like, nope, you've got an NDA and you can't tell anybody you're doing this.
I was amazed when that came out. I was amazed he was able to actually not tell him.
Yeah, because what's going to happen if...
It's like, what have you been doing for the last 3 months? Oh, I've been sitting at home mowing the lawn. And then they find out he's been recording with Kerry King.
Yeah, I'm... That kind of boggles me. Because then what? All of a sudden, you know, somebody offers a big Slayer payday. And so that Kerry goes, oh, well, I'll see ya.
And then Mark ends up with no band.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thought did cross my mind because Slayer, of course, they did some reunion shows.
Yeah.
But where's this Kerry King thing going to go, though?
Right.
You know, is this going to be a multi-album thing? And then the other thing that I was thinking was, so what's Mark's role in the band then? Because if he can, as a member, what I'm saying is, like, you know, there's the member and then there's what people call a member.
Yeah.
So with Mark doing the Kerry King thing now, what was his role membership in the band before the Kerry King thing? Was he on the salary? And he could just say, I can do the Kerry King thing because I'm on a salary with Death Angel. That, you know what I'm trying to say? It's that if you have an ownership in Death Angel,
right,
with the brand, so you get all the profits and you get all the losses, you're more than likely going to be very wary of doing the Kerry thing and doing the non-disclosure agreement because you could fuck yourself over with Death Angel.
Could, yeah.
Now, if you're in Death Angel and you're on a salary,
yeah,
that's completely, that's different.
Yeah.
But of course, that's never going to come out.
Right.
Because like that could be just Rob's band. Rob could own the name.
Yeah.
He might be the one that's, you know.
Yeah.
That, because didn't they play shows after Mark left? Maybe not.
Remember.
Maybe over the years they played. Oh, they did The Organization, but that was a different band.
But it's, yeah, I just think it's a fucked up situation. I just don't even, like, understand why Kerry would do that.
Because Kerry is interested in Kerry.
Well, yes. Well, always has been, right?
But I don't put any of the blame on Kerry. Kerry said, right, I want you to record the record.
Yeah.
I want you to sing on it. Here's what I want from you.
Yeah.
And Mark said, okay. It's all Mark's decision.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with that.
I don't know why Kerry would have even had a non-disclosure agreement. Everyone knew he was making a record.
Yeah.
Is he that insensitive that he didn't want people to know who the singer was because he wanted to break it for promotion and not give a fuck about what that decision would actually do for Mark?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you're the guy that's identified as the voice of Death Angel. It would be like Chuck Billy doing that to Testament. It just doesn't.
Yeah, no. Mark doing the Metal Allegiance thing.
That's different.
Yeah, but these were here and there.
Yeah,
they never clash. Now,
right.
So if you're in Death Angel now and you're Death Angel's management,
mm-hmm.
are you looking at Kerry King's dates before you're offered a tour? Is that the way it's going moving forward? It certainly seems that way.
Yeah. Well, I also can't.
They can't replace Mark. Death Angel can't replace. They really can't now at this stage.
The other part is like, how much do you think Kerry's going to tour?
Where's he earning his money? It's not on selling the record.
I'm sure they get some pretty decent residuals from the Slayer catalog.
Probably now, yeah.
You know?
And I'm sure the reunion shows wasn't an adverse effect on their bank balance either.
All they get to do is, yeah, we need some money. All right, let's go throw a reunion show.
Let's play three or four shows.
Boom. Okay, good. Bank's full again. Mm. And then I can go back and sit home with my snakes. So I just don't see him like going and doing constant touring an album and touring. And I don't know. I don't see it.
I can see him touring a lot more, you know, next year, because all these guys, all they want to do every year is they'll get on the festival circuit.
Yeah. But that's a limited window though.
I understand that. I know, but I think with Kerry King, he didn't want Slayer to end. I think he still wants to bring out albums, and I don't think he wants to wait 5 years between records either to do them.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if they were in the studio next year doing another record. Now, whether Mark is singing on it or not, I don't know.
Right.
But, and that was the other thing with, you know, the band is called Kerry King.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a band name with Mark in it.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of head scratching for me going on at the time.
I'm like,
maybe this non-disclosure agreement thing happens a lot more than we know, but I was like, fucking hell, like you're fucking over your own band.
Yeah.
And now they're playing Christmas shows.
Yeah. Well, they are their annual deal.
Yeah. So they'll play those and then what? Like how old is Humanicide? 3 years old? 2 or 3 years old?
I think so.
Yeah. So they were like the Overkills and the Flotsams and all that. 2 years new record. Two years new record. Now it's 2 or 3 years and you've got all this going on. And I wouldn't be surprised now next year if Death Angel called it a day, personally.
Well.
How long can this go on for? Like you.
Well, the thing that sucks is that they're younger than all the people they came up with.
Yeah, true. And Mark still sings the material really well, and the new stuff is really good.
I mean, the only other person who was like in that same time frame that was younger at that point was Alex.
Hmm.
You know?
But how long, you know, how many tours do Death Angel do? So when you're offered a tour that's pretty decent, that's got a pretty good run on it,
mm-hmm.
that's, I think it was probably, what, a month, maybe 6 weeks?
Yeah.
In the US. And you're a musician in the band, and you're thinking, right, where am I going to get my income this year?
Yeah.
And you're looking at that tour as probably being one of the ones that, yeah, that's a good chunk of weeks here. I can earn some money on that.
Yeah.
And this happens.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing would be, as we're talking about it, is who was thinking Death Angel and Wasp go together? Because they really don't, if you think about it.
I don't think it matters these days. I think you see it a lot more than you used to.
Oh, I know, but so in Europe, not a problem. I wouldn't even give it a second thought. But here, we're a lot more segmented. So I look at when that last Queensryche show with Saint. I was a freaking happy camper to see Saint and Queensryche. They are not two bands that normally go together. They're not. You got one that's pretty more like old school, and you have the other that's kind of more a progressive cinematic kind of thing. And you could see it within the people too, that there were people that actually left after Saint. Or that watched, and they really weren't very excited about it. But then they were very excited when Queensryche came on, right? Yeah. Or vice versa. To me, I was like, I'm sitting here in Worcester watching Saint. This is freaking awesome. Hey, and I get to watch Queensryche too. All right, you know? But I was more the minority there. And I can say, yeah, I mean, Nikki was more of, Saint, whatever. Like, we're missing the other show we have tickets for this. But yeah, the Queensryche show was good, you know? Mm. And there were a lot of people like that. So I look at that and go, how many people going to see Wasp are going to really be familiar with Death Angel?
I don't know. Good question. They might be more familiar with their earlier stuff.
I mean, granted, you know, when you look at Wasp in the scheme of things, they were that harder edge stuff, but it's still different. That's still more like metal. There's a glam metal chunk in there too, with a little bit of shock thrown in versus pure thrash.
Pure thrash now. Earlier Death Angel, you know, some more flavors in there.
Yeah.
Their newer stuff, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. The newer stuff is just riff heavy thrash metal.
Right, yeah. I mean, once you get off of Andy and you get more of that straight beat, and yeah, it's straight thrash now.
But yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up. Because I don't get down here that often. And I got all this shit I want to get out.
Purge.
Yeah, so we'll spend a minute or two. Let's talk about the new Dream Theater that the song just came out today. So you're Portnoy back.
Yeah.
You got the new record coming out next year. They're going out on tour. What are your expectations on that? You heard the song?
I have not heard the song.
I have.
So, yeah, I heard they were going to put a new album together. Obviously, the Portnoy return has been there for a bit. And I know that when people asked me about it before, my whole thing was what will make a difference, at least I think will make a difference, was going to be whether does Mike walk in the door and return back to his former role, not just as a drummer, but as the mouthpiece, as pushing that kind of being the more of the metal bastion. Granted, John has maintained a lot of that, but there's been a lot of other elements that John's allowed to creep in more. And so is Mike going to go back and have that same voice and authority that he had before? If he does, I'm excited. If it's more of a case of they've done a very astute play of let's bring back one of the best drummers in the world and pop him back in there, and no slight on Mike because Mike's a freaking awesome drummer, but Dream Theater fans are going to be very excited for the return of Mike Portnoy all the time. And when we talk about earlier the amount of traffic that would happen when we'd have Michael on, similar thing we would have
Portnoy,
yeah.
Too many Mikes and Michaels.
Yeah, I'm like, can't be another Mike. Yeah. So it's a similar thing. I think he's got like his own little fan base in there, and people listen to that band and new albums to be like, what's Mike gonna do? And he plays really well with John too.
What you're gonna get, and I've already seen it, is people are gonna overreact.
Mm.
Right? So they're gonna overreact to Mike Portnoy coming back into Dream Theater.
Yeah.
And what they're also going to do, and I don't do it, they're also going to now denigrate the stuff that they did with Mike Mangini and say that Portnoy is back now.
Hmm.
This is the best song they've released since Black Clouds and Silver Linings, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get that overreaction.
Sure.
I've already seen it.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm interested to know, and I hope to God that they do this, is they do not ignore the albums that Mangini played on.
Right.
And that they at least represent, it's Dream Theater.
Right.
Portnoy was gone for, they did 5 records with Mangini, right? Mm. I think 3 of them are stunning.
Yeah.
Right. I think that the last 2 and the first one are stunning. The Astonishing, I've no time for. Right.
And over that time too, John has done some tonal changes and, you know, changed guitars, changed amps. So he has kind of grown in a different direction as a player as well. So, I mean, do you allow that to continue when you meld Mike back in, or is the expectation of like, John, like, yeah, forget that. Like, we're going to skip back.
Well, you brought up the point, what role is Mike going to have when he's back in the band? Is it going to be the same role?
Right.
Right. If they, to me, one of the telltale signs is if they don't play the Mangini stuff, and I could be completely off base here, but I'm going there anyway, is Mike Portnoy came in and said, I'm only going to play the stuff I played on. And the rest of the band said, okay.
Mm.
I can't either, but
you know,
I'm going.
Drummer.
Yeah, but I'm going there.
Yeah.
Right. And the other, I could swing it the other way and say that if they end up playing some of the Mangini stuff, I can look at Petrucci and say, yeah, you just put your foot down and said, right, Mike, here's one of the things, you're going to come back. We're playing this stuff, and that's the end of it. And Mike went, okay. So maybe that's where the dynamic changed from when he left and when he came back. And then there's the other dynamic. I think it was him and LaBrie were button heads.
Yeah.
There's that. The song's good. It's fucking 8 or 9 minutes long. The first thing you nearly always do with Dream Theater songs when they announce the records, 16 minutes, 8 minutes, 9 minutes, 1 minute 20, that's the piano piece.
Yeah. it's kind of what you do with Iron Maiden now too, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah, but then you look, Harris, oh shit.
And then you look and you see the minute one, you go, oh, that's the short intro.
I think they're starting in Europe.
Hmm.
And again, they fucking play lots of shows.
Yeah.
And they got the new record coming out, and I'll buy it, and I'll probably really like it. But, you know, just don't be another one of these bands that just ignores an era of the band because one of the guys isn't,
right,
you know, wasn't on it. You know, it's, you're playing the band's songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I think, like I said, Mike's always been a drummer's drummer. So, I don't think he'd have a problem playing anybody's stuff.
Well, it's not as if he can't play it.
No.
That's a given.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, Mike is a fan.
Yeah.
He's always been a, you know, you watch his YouTube shows and you listen to him in interviews. Like, his knowledge of music is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. His music collection. He's one of these guys that, you know, I just don't play music. I fucking live and breathe right. shit, you know?
Yeah.
And he did this YouTube show a few years ago. I don't know whether you saw it. He went through his record collection from A to Z.
Yeah.
And it wasn't his old stuff. It was the new stuff.
Yeah.
And some of it was his. But he went through it and, like, he was just talking about all these bands, what they meant to him, and then some of the records he played on. And
right.
It was fucking, it was brilliant stuff to watch.
Yeah, no, like I said, he's great. And yeah, Mike, if you listen to this and you now know who has your Mexico City bass drum heads, you're still not getting them back.
So yeah, so that's it. I'm done. I can't talk anymore.
All right. Well, that'll be a wrap. We'll have passed the 600 mark.
Yeah, I think 500. Which one did we have? So you had Fleming Rasmussen as a...
That was 300.
That was 300.
We did 300 and 301 was Fleming. That was our Master of Puppets.
That far back?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Which one was Joe Perry? Was that 400?
Joe Perry was 203.
Oh, okay. And for 600, you have me and you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it goes along with most of the podcasts that are like disappearing from as audio only, and they're all going to
the Zoom,
the YouTube
interviews, and YouTube,
the YouTube video ones instead. So,
who wants to look at us?
But we're still doing the OG way.
Even my wife doesn't want to look at me.
Yeah, my ex didn't want to. So, all right,
let's get out of here.
So, with that, that is it for this week. Put a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself and
Richie,
have yourselves a great middle week. And until we eventually talk to you again, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.